Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Iron Age Marketing. I'm Nikki P here, as always, and our guest today is Donald T. DeLay. Is that all correct?
That's right.
Right on. Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do there, Donald?
Well, I'm a cartoonist in Florida. It's my full-time job. Currently working on a book called No Cover about John Malin's search for his Dale Keown cover. It's a comedy romp set in the post-apocalyptic America. Travels the land trying to find his cover. Comes across SJWs and land whales and all sorts of mischief.
Okay. What inspired the book? Like, what's this all come from? Why'd you take that direction with it?
The writer, Sierra Whiskey, came up with the idea because John Malin had been waiting for his cover from Dale Keown for a year or so, and he just thought it was funny. He came up with a two-page little short story for John's character to go to the post office and rip open a mail truck and find out that his cover was sent somewhere else. And we just kind of rolled with that after the fans on Twitter said to make something else. I mean, not make something else, but make something else of it.
They said, this is the thing that you need to be doing right now.
Yeah.
Right on.
So we just rolled with it.
I'm curious, is this the first thing that you're putting out there in front of people, or have you been doing this, been a cartoonist a long time? Obviously, you say you're a professional cartoonist, or...
I've been doing this for a while. It's not the first thing I've put out. I put out my own book called Brutus the Badass, books 1 and 2, about a bounty hunter that has no memory.
Oh, that's fun.
And I did Dracula with Clint Stoker, Dracula adaptation, and Cash Grab with Cecil.
Okay. What is your inspiration? Because that's kind of all over the map on, like, themes and ideas. I guess, where did you come from in your own, like, reading to kind of lead you down those paths?
Oh, my gosh. I don't know, man. Just being a cartoonist kind of takes you everywhere. People come at you with scripts, and you just pick the one that you like. I just happen to want to work in different genres.
Okay.
I work in different styles, too, so it helps. It helps a little bit to be able to work in different genres when you do that.
Okay, and I always have to ask this question because it's such a weird job for anybody to have, but how do you find your way to cartooning in the first place?
You kind of fall ass backwards into it. At least that's how it happened with me.
I'm curious what that means, because I frankly at one point wanted to be a cartoonist and couldn't find a way to make it happen. So,
well, I just started posting. The way it started for me was back in the day, I just posted random pictures online, fan art, things like that. And then I said one day that I wanted to work with Justin Jordan, and he liked my art and said, let's do it. And we ended up doing a book for Image called Death of Love about a guy who takes a random drug at a club and ends up seeing Cupid everywhere. And it just kind of snowballed from there about getting jobs.
Interesting. I mean, name drop Image, that's a good pedigree, right?
It can be.
Okay, that's true. So you do primarily work for other people. You said you do have your own book, Brutus. What's the difference between, like, working on your own book and working with someone else, as far as, like, obviously restraints on creative freedom are going to be there? Do you have a preference as to one or the other?
The biggest difference for me is money. You know, working on other people's books, they pay me to draw them. Working on my own book, I have to do it for free until it makes money. So that's the biggest difference. And as far as preference goes, I don't think I have one. You know, I like the creative freedom of working on my own thing, but I also like the restrictions of a script from other people. And I like paying my bills.
That is the great old-fashioned motivation of being able to eat when you're done. So I'm curious to know more about your book, Brutus the...
The Badass.
Brutus the Badass. That's just a fun name to me. Is it comedic as it sounds and, like, style, or what's the idea behind this?
It's a comedy sci-fi action comic. It was my love letter to books like Lobo and Deadpool.
Okay.
And things like that. This comedy action romps that are over the top and don't take themselves too seriously.
I've never wanted to see a comic book character in, like, film more than Lobo. And I'm terrified that if they actually tried to make that movie, how awful it would be, especially after seeing what they did with him in the New 52. I love that classic. Just the idea of, like, a space biker from hell.
The Simon Bisley run and Keith Giffen stuff, Alan Davis or Alan Grant.
Oh, it's the best.
Yeah, it's that's the good stuff. I'm a little wary of them announcing that movie too, because I really want to see it. I want Jason Momoa to be Lobo, and I want to see Michael Bay direct it.
Oh, I don't even like Michael Bay, but like, it is kind of the only guy you want to do something that's that bombastic.
He's perfect. He makes movies for 14-year-olds, and he's got fart jokes in all of them. It's kind of perfect.
Let's actually have the last thing I got. I have Lobo versus Superman that they did like a three book run a year or two ago. It's fun, but it's not like a classic Lobo. You can't do a classic Lobo anymore, really, sadly. But sidetracked with my own nerddom here. You were telling me about Brutus the Badass. So tell me more about Brutus.
Yeah, well, he's kind of in that vein, and he's a bounty hunter who woke up one day with no memory of his past, and he runs around with a little robot sidekick that thinks it's human, causing all sorts of mischief.
Okay. What kind of world is this set in? You said post-apocalyptic on this one, too, or?
No, this one's set in outer space, all sorts of different worlds.
Okay. I have to ask, is this a motorcycle kind of book or space bike, or we're not full ripping off?
No, his spaceship is like a souped-up, diesel-powered, cranked-up version of a 1956 Chevy Bel Air.
I love it. I just imagine like a stream of the most toxic fumes traveling behind it everywhere it goes.
Yeah. Basically.
Right on. How many books do you have in that series?
Two so far.
Two so far. Do you have
we're thinking about.
No, you're good. How many do you plan on working on it?
We have it planned as a trilogy, but we're not sure when the third one's going to come out.
Well, I mean, when you don't know when you get paid for it, it sometimes affects when things come out.
I got two books that hired me to do work for them before I can get to Brutus.
Right on. I'm already in my head, by the way, thinking of like the marketing side of it. It's like, oh man, you're already two books deep and you got a third one. How are we making this happen? So now I'm curious because like I don't get as many comic creators on here as I'd like. Most of the people I talk to end up being like Pulp Fiction writers. What are the issues that I think are different in the, say, comic book space than would be, you know, the general fiction space?
I don't know if I can tell you that because I don't generally read, you know, general fiction. I kind of just stick to comic books. It's my forte. I'm not sure what's going on in that area.
I mean, pretty much the same kind of stuff at any rate. I know a lot of one of the big things the past couple of years has been a lot of like the awards, you know, or I think the awards that they give out in science fiction and things like that have been kind of taken over by a particular sect of the populace. Lots of people have been blacklisted. I think they should change the name of an award that they've been giving out forever because someone had a bad past or something like that. Just that kind of dumb shit. And, you know, people not feeling comfortable to create in the space that they've created forever. Or feeling like, or on the consumer side of things, you get a lot of people feeling like, I'm not getting the creations that I want because the only things that are being allowed to be created by the people of money are in a very particular vein and, frankly, usually not that good. So does that sound like any of the kind of things that you've seen happening in the comic book space?
Sounds pretty familiar.
I think it's affected pretty much every. I mean, I come out all this like I've been a musician for years, and kind of watch the same stuff happen to us a different degree in music. I think the one difference is that with music, because everything happened about 20 years earlier when we were able to make music more on ourselves and not need the labels. It kind of had blown up the industry before all of like the woke stuff started trickling in. So now. I'm curious. You have your own book. You've mentioned obviously that your own book doesn't pay as well as like say working for other people. Is it doesn't pay as well, or is it like the paycheck that you can't rely on kind of the situation? I'm curious.
A little bit of both. It depends on how much it makes when it's crowdfunding. When you have to order the book and pay for shipping and all that, it depends on how much is left over, and then you get to split it with the writer. So it depends on what's left over, if you know how good the paycheck is, but I get paid in one lump sum from that, as opposed to you know getting paid per page on someone else's book.
So I know I hand this in, there's a paycheck coming my way because not mine. When you're doing the crowdfunding thing, what does a lead-up experience look like to that? You create the book like ahead of time, start the crowdfunding to see if you can get it paid for. How does that work?
In a perfect world, you'd have the book done before you crowdfund, but nowadays it's you're crowdfunding to get the book done. So you do a couple of pages on spec to put up on the website in order to get funding to do the book.
Okay. And I'm curious why you say that in a perfect world. Like, so from where I'm at as a marketer, like if I have someone who's going to be producing a book, I would say you should start promoting at least 6 months before you ever finish the book, because you should be spending all of that time getting people hyped up for the thing that's going to come. Like, the idea is that you want to have people salivating kind of in a frenzy for the day that, man, can I finally go push this buy button for this thing? You know, spending that time building up email lists and getting people kind of into your space. If you're doing it right, getting people out there actually promoting for you is the thing you really want to try and leverage. Yeah, and the beauty of it being is that you don't want to find yourself sinking a lot of time and energy into something that doesn't look like it's going to move anyways. So I'm just curious on why you feel like that in a perfect world you'd have the whole thing done. That seems like you're doing a whole hell of a lot of work for nothing at that point, like just hoping that things will kind of come through at the end.
Yeah, it has the benefit of having it done has the benefit of letting backers know that this book won't take as long to come out. It'll take 2-3 months, however long it takes for the printer to get it done and to you.
As opposed to, like, I had Joe Ball on with his book, Death, Death, Death. It's, you know, he said it's 300 pages, and he's been working on fulfilling for 2 years because he's still got to finish the damn book.
Right. So, if you have it the other way around, when you're funding to produce the book, then the backers have to wait that time. They have to wait that production time, and then they also have to wait for the shipping time. So it's just added time on it. So that's why I say in a perfect world that the book would be done, so that there's less time for the backers to wait.
So you're thinking of it as a perfect world for, like, the consumer themselves, so they don't have to feel like they're getting dicked around.
Correct.
Okay, that's actually an interesting thought. I wouldn't have considered it. I guess I've spent so much time on the other side of things, like, well, how do we not do as much work as I can without making money for it? Because I got a wife and a kid, and I got to pay for food, you know. In the past, obviously, you've gone through some crowdfunding cycles. What has that looked like for you? Like, how do you prepare for that? Or what do you know that you need to have ready for that to start?
As far as what goes on the website?
Just in general. Like, say, so you know you're going to start, you know you're going to have a crowdfund campaign. What do you need before you go and, like, go to Kickstarter and you go fund my comic, wherever you're going to go to start that? What are the things that you have to have in place to feel comfortable pushing that start button?
You have to have at least 5 pages to put on the website to show people what they're going to get into. It can be random or they can be sequential. You have to have a good synopsis of the book to put on there. And your spiel about selling it should be pretty good, too. So those three things in order for me to be comfortable and in order to push the go button.
Okay, I'm interested. What do you refer to as your spiel there? Like, when you're making your pitch, I guess, what do you put into that? What is the thing that you're trying to utilize and leverage to get people to want to buy your book?
You're in that spiel, you're explaining yourself and what the book means to you, I guess, and trying to hype up the readers in order to get them to buy the book. Outside of this is what the book is about. You know, it's more like this is what I'm about and this is what the book means to me, if that makes sense.
So I'm curious, from a marketing standpoint, I would say that's an interesting approach. That's not what I would tell my daughter. One of my biggest first things I taught my daughter, I want her to be able to sell shit, because you can always make money selling shit. And so the first lesson I taught her was actually when you're selling things, you're never selling the thing that you're selling. Like, for her. Yeah, she was like, I want to run a lemonade stand. I'm okay, you can run a lemonade stand, but you have to understand lemonade is not actually what you're selling if you have a lemonade stand. When you're selling the effect that this is going to have on the person. You need the thing that you need to focus on in sales is not the lemonade, it's the refreshment the person is going to get from that glass of lemonade. They need to be able to look into the future and say, God, that lemonade is going to make me have the best afternoon ever. I'm going to feel so quenched. I'm going to go home and love my wife better. It's the idea of, like, you're making them, this item is going to make them the hero in a story they didn't even know that they were living. So like there's always the fine walk between how much do I like build up my person and do like a say brand building, which is the idea of like what does the book mean to me versus the actual sales pitch, which is typically all about the consumer themselves. Like this is if you buy my book, you're dick's going to grow 4 inches, your hair is suddenly going to become lustrous, you're no longer bald, and every ex-girlfriend you've ever had is going to call you on the phone to say how amazing you were, and they regret letting you slip by them. You know, that's the idea of what you want to be selling on.
So it's more like giving them a connection to the book as opposed to a connection to yourself.
The connection to yourself is an important part of like making sure that you have like a brand, so to speak. But in the actual sales pitch to a customer, it's frankly, if you go to a store and you buy a book, what are you buying when you buy a book? You're buying what it's going to do for you. Like, why do I buy a fantasy novel versus a science fiction novel at any given time? You know, I'm just not feeling that type of story. That's why, at any reason why, I don't know about you, but I have a bookshelf over here with probably 20 or 30 books I've never touched because I want to read it someday, but I just haven't had the moment that I want to read it come to me. It'll happen someday. But it hasn't happened yet. So you need to have, for me, I need to have the thing that's available at any given time for how I feel at any given time. Like one of the things that we say when you're trying to sell anything is you want to enter the conversation somebody's already having in their head. It's like if you're advertising, chances are, say you're on the internet, which is the way probably most of us do our advertising, you're going to be interrupting them no matter what they're doing. If you're advertising on YouTube, you're trying to make them pay attention to you than whatever clip video that they were down the rabbit hole with. If you're on Facebook, you're trying to tell them, hey, I've got this thing that's more important than the people you were checking on Facebook. So you need to be able to interrupt what they're doing and kind of click in there. And the best way to do that is to kind of, it's why people like politics so much, is because it's a real easy way to like, wait, what did you say? And trick them into paying attention to what you're saying. The problem with that is you then start building animosity that you don't want to have because everyone's chosen a side politically and that's its own mess. But the intention is still the same. It's what can I do to enter the thoughts that you're already having? If you're selling something in a desert, clearly the thought that everyone's having is, God damn, I'm thirsty. So like if you're putting out a book, like the thing that I would ask is what does this book offer that nothing else is offering right now? So if you're making something that's like, say, very Lobo-esque, the thing that I would focus on, you know, is, you know, we're awash in a sea of books. I mean, and frankly, even like on like if you're a right winger, even on our side of things, I hate saying our, but even on that side of things, you have people that are like promoting ideology and things like that, and they tend to get a little preachy. The idea of just good old fashioned fun, you know, and more importantly, subversive fun. You know, the ability to just screw you. This is funny. There's a whole world of people starving and thirsty for that right now. And if you can tell someone and get them to believe that you're the best at delivering like a subversive, fun story, like and some people do have that built into their brand. Like Larry Correa, I'll read pretty much anything Larry Correa puts out because I just know him, his personality, like the kind of sense of humor that he has, what we're going to get out of it. So his brand helps bolster what the individual books are about and what they offer. But at the end of the day, like the book has still got to offer the thing that I expect that book to bring me. And in him, it's usually like an offbeat sense of humor. I've gotten very preachy all of a sudden on this episode. I apologize.
No, I'm taking it all in. I'm taking it all in. On the first, I actually did some of that on the first Brutus book was we tried to sell it as, you know, a return to 90s fun comics. And people seem to like that.
Okay.
So I see what you're saying.
I'm curious. You've sold two books. What have there been differences in the approach that you've taken from book one to book two? And I'm also kind of curious, like, what was the time difference between the books? Like, were you selling them 2 years after, 6 years after?
That was 6 years apart, unfortunately.
Okay.
But the first book was sold on the return to fun action comics. Just all out fun action comics, and we're having current day comics where they're trying to preach their ideologies to you. You know, we're just returning to something that's just turn off your brain and enjoy it. The second book, honestly, I don't know if we really didn't have a marketing strategy for that one. We were selling it on
hoping that people remember the book before.
Yeah, We were basically selling it to the audience that already purchased it.
Okay.
And people that had become new fans of my work and the writer's work.
Okay. So then with that, you have some way to kind of keep those people in your sphere, like some type of outreach between books. Like you have like a, an email list associated with people who've purchased the book in the past, things like that. You send out an email like once a month or something between there.
Not once a month, which I should do. I should be doing posting, sending out, you know, preview pages of books that I'm working on, things like that. But usually when I have a project coming up, this is when I push it out. Just because I feel like I'm flooding people's mailboxes every month with something.
So well, here's what we'll say. And this is something that's a concern everybody has. Because we all know we have email, like, oh, God, more email. But we also know the email we really want, we're going to read. And the email we don't, we'll either unsubscribe or click the button on. Now, if I unsubscribe, the chances are I wasn't going to buy the next book anyways. And typically with an email list, it costs money to have somebody on it. So they're probably better off not being there and you having to pay to keep them on your email list. Your email list should be like your diehards. Now, this is actually where I would say like your idea of like, what does the book mean to me? And your email and your like, this is to me, it's part of like the marketing of the brand. Is a lot of what the email would take place. And the thing that why I say it's best to kind of have like a steady stream kind of always going is that if you only ever worry about when you're in like a creation or sales cycle, there's a lot of time in there where people can forget what that email's about. You know, if you haven't released a book in 2 months or two months and they just get this, you know, email every or 2 years. And they only get an email once a year or something. And they're going to look at that 2 years down the road and go, what is this? Who's this person emailing me? What is this about? Just get it out of here. Whereas if you have like that steady reminder of who you are and, you know, why they remember you and why they should keep remembering you, it's going to keep more people kind of in your sphere and keep them hungry for the next thing. It could be something as simple as you could be showing them other stuff that you're working on, or if you want to, or you had a doodle or something that you just, you know, oh God, I'm sitting here writing this book for so-and-so else, but this is what I really want to be doing, you know, and just like a quick sketch of something, of an idea, you know, storylines, you know, that you know you'll never be able to create, but like, wouldn't it be fun if we got to do something like this, you know, just give like a, it's like Easter eggs almost. You know, kind of apportioned out throughout the year to kind of keep people thirsty and keep them interested. More importantly, the thing is just to keep people remembering who you are. Like in a 6 year cycle, like you got 6 years between books there. There's a lot of drop off that people can take and say, okay, I was in a different place. I don't remember any of that. You have a better chance of kind of keeping them your people if you're keeping in a constant contact with.
That makes sense.
And like I said, it's. If it's something I'm genuinely interested in, musicians that, like, I still kind of I keep their emails. I haven't bought anything from them in years because I haven't really had much to buy. But like, it interests me what that artist is doing, kind of in their journey, their walk. I think there's a certain degree which many of us are creators ourselves. Certainly, like within the comics and pulp spaces, and we're all kind of interested in what the other guys are doing. How does he manage to do this? How is he working on it? You know. So obviously we don't know. I'm curious, how long do you think it's going to be between your next book and the previous book? You said you've got two other projects you're working on before that, but I don't know how that actually looks like time wise.
Well, the one I'm currently working on should be coming out in September, and then after that, probably a year later for the next book, and then I would say another year.
Okay, and so like that'll be like cool. It's like you get 6 years between book one and book two, and then. It's had another 4 years between both the previous book and this book. So 10 years from one end to the other.
Wow. When you put it like that, that's a lot. Wow.
Well, it is, but you know, the one thing you can focus on, I mean, and I will say this. So I grew up listening to Stephen King, and the Dark Tower books were my thing. And he'd release one, honestly, it probably a cycle like you're talking, 6 years from one, 4 years to the next. If we got one every other year, We were having a good a good run of things, but there's something we said, like I still wanted that next thing to come out. I needed to know what happened. I needed to know where we're going. But there's also something to like that journey. No matter where you come into it and where you end at, there's something to kind of be cherished and savored about the time you spent together. Like if you get people to buy book one, book two, book three, that's a decade that people have kind of spent with you on this journey. And that's something else to kind of be worth thinking about. It's like, you know, it's like a friend. We don't talk all the time, but when we talk, it's really important. You know, it's something that we have together in this small way. I guess just a couple different ways to be thinking about time.
Yeah, you're kind of like blowing my mind here.
Well, out of curiosity, do you have any questions, since I'm sure you don't talk to a lot of people who are into marketing all that often, any questions you would have, like, just outright for me?
Not off the top of my head. I mean, I can't, like I said on Twitter, I'm not very good at this stuff, so I wouldn't even know where to begin to ask.
Okay. Well, hopefully we've given you kind of some things to think about today.
Definitely.
All right. Well, while we have you here, where can people go and pick up the two books that you do already have?
Well, campaign funding is over for that, so they'll have to go to NASA Robotti 13 on Twitter to see about getting books. Those books, they can buy a digital copy off of my Gumroad, Donald Delay at Gumroad.com.
Okay, right on.
And they can get Dracula there as well.
Awesome. Well, we'll make sure to have those links put up for people, and we'll try and get you some traffic out to the site, man.
Cool. Thanks.
And you have yourself a good one.
You too.